I'm Lauren Layfield, and you're listening to Your Next Podcast. This is the podcast that brings you a different series every single week, helping you to find your new favourite show. So Christmas is done and dusted, we're well into January now, and I don't want to sound ungrateful, but I've got a lot of junk that's sort of just lying around my house. Like gifts that were bought for me, like with good intentions, but just stuff that I'm never going to use, not to sound ungrateful. I kind of wish I'd asked people to buy me like experience kind of gifts, do you know, just nice ways to go out and make happy memories. And that actually is exactly what today's podcast is all about. So Roots is a show hosted by Clara Amfo, and it's all about travel, trips and memories. So Clara meets celebrity guests such as Tom Grennan, Candice Brathwaite, Babatunde Eleshi and Ariel Free, and asks them about the travel experiences that have shaped who they are. Now this episode is with the one, the only, Cray David. And before we get going, a warning to you, this episode, it might inspire nostalgia, a love of UK garage music and an irresistible urge to revisit some of Craig's iconic hits. Enjoy. This is Roots.
Hello and welcome to Roots from LNER. I'm Clara Amfo. Now, every episode, we'll journey through my special guest travel stories, exploring the destinations and experiences that have shaped them. Today on the show, Craig David.
And I was just able to find my passion by having some time and space. That's what I think Southampton really blessed me with. It wasn't rushing. You had time to enjoy being a kid. So actually, that going away to Miami, which gave a break and a pause, the life moves on. But when I came back into it, it was like this love of like, oh, you're back. The front of house lights go on, and I can see in the crowd, there's like people are making a bit of fuss over one gentleman in particular. And I look, I'm singing Walking Away, and I look, and it's Stevie Wonder himself.
Get credit when you join LNER Perks. Visit lner.co.uk/perks. Welcome to Roots from LNER. I'm Clara Amfo, and on this episode, we are journeying into the travel stories of a singer, artist, producer, general creative who spends much of his life on the road, and he takes his work all over the world with him. But in the UK, specifically Southampton, that's the place where he will always call home. Now, he's an artist who's been in the industry for over 25 years. And in fact, he truly is a trailblazer and a pioneer when it comes to the UK's garage scene, and was the soundtrack to so many people's teenage years and beyond. And he's arguably, I think, one of the friendliest men in the business and the consummate professional. It is the one and only Craig David.
Clara, I appreciate you, you know.
Craig David, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming through to Roots.
It's such a pleasure. That was so nice. Just like the thing, when you listen back to that, you're like, yeah. And Southampton being home. Do you know what I mean?
That's your core, isn't it?
It's so. And it feels like you never really leave home, right? You always have those fond memories. And you see the world, but you're always anchored into where you were born, you know?
Oh, exactly. Born to do it, literally, as you said. And we're going to get into that. There's so much to discuss. So I want to know all about your life through travel, through music, through all of it. But selfishly, I want to talk about when we first met, because I was thinking about it before today. And I think I've still got the picture somewhere. We first met at Best of All in, I think, 2014 and 2015. And you know what? I believe it makes you rest in power. Darling Caroline Flack, I think it was Caroline, might have introduced us, actually.
Yes.
So I remember we were watching you DJ in a tent, and she was like, come on, meet Craig.
Do you know?
And we all took a picture. We all took pictures. Yeah.
It was so good times.
Yeah.
Because I'd just come, like, was on the cusp of coming back from Miami. Mm. And I'd been sort of in a bit of a cocoon out there. So I was starting to meet, like, the new crew that was like, we were running like the music industry, we're in radio, and I was meeting people, and Caroline's just like, God rest her soul, she's such a beautiful woman. Mm. And when we met, all I can remember is like just the bundle of joy in you, you know? No. I saw the smile first, and you were so gracious, and you were talking about music and what it meant to you. And I think I was performing in the Bollywood tent.
That's it, that's
and
it.
And Mark Ronson was on after.
Yeah, oh my God, that was such, and it was like, yeah, Mark Ronson, Lion Babe. Mm. It was a really good lineup. I think Missy Elliott might have been headlining the festival that year.
I think it could well have been as well, you know.
It was a really good year.
It was so good. I was so grateful to have sort of met you at that time because it was like, it was all fresh and new.
Yeah.
And then watching your rise to success. I mean, you're already doing your thing, but just seeing you like, watching that from that juxtaposition, I just think it's beautiful that we met like that.
Here we are, exactly. Big up, Caroline. I mean, it's 2025. It's been a decade since we first met. Right. It's been 25 years since you've kind of, you know, made a name for yourself in this industry. And I think what I want to do today, obviously, is celebrate you and your journey. Literally, no pun intended.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say no pun intended, but it's LNER, babe. We're going on trains. And today we are off to London, where you are going to be finishing your commitment tour next month. But first, let's take it back to where it all began. Southampton.
Yeah.
Where you grew up, for your core, where you, I guess, started to find your creativity. Can you tell us about little Craig back in the day?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like I sort of warp into that version of me like on a daily basis, because there was some of my most fondest memories of growing up on a council estate in Southampton called the Holyrood Estate. I lived in Queen's House, number 25, remember it well.
25, your lucky number this year.
Lucky number. 25 years of born to do it. Yeah. Yes, like, so it all started there. And then I just remember the walks to a place called St Mary Street, which is now very, very close to where the Southampton football ground is. And there was a place called Music City. And they had like, peered through the window at the top of the street, and it had Technics 1210s decks. It had like flashing light disco lights and twin cassette tape decks and just all the things as a kid that I wanted to buy, but never had the money to buy when I was early doors. And then the barbers around the corner, like where I got my hair cut. It was a very local community. That's why I loved that. It was a wholesome upbringing, and I was just able to find my passion by having some time and space. That's what I think Southampton really blessed me with. It wasn't rushing. You had time to enjoy being a kid.
Well, that's it. Because I know, obviously, you've lived a very big and colourful life in some big cities. So to come from somewhere like Southampton must have been quite a shell shock to you when you first became successful and you started seeing the world?
Yeah. I mean, you've gone from writing songs like, I don't know, Walking Away and Fill Me In, like from my bedroom window, looking out over a car park with my mum's little banged up Fiat Uno in the corner, which we loved, but she would say, yeah, the door nearly fell off and like it was banged. but I was fond of that car. Got me from A to B. The same one that picked me up from the clubs when I was DJing with record boxes. My mum coming at 2 o'clock in the morning to pick me up, having done like her 9 to 5 and working hard throughout the week. It just reminds me of my mum, the sacrifices my mum and my dad and my grandma, but her picking me up at 2 o'clock. Imagine that you're tired and you've got to get up early to get to work, but you're going to come and pick your son up from DJing. It's those memories that you just don't necessarily appreciate at the time, but when you grow older, you're like, oh my God, like you did that for me.
She really believed in you.
She truly, truly did. And I think for me, like the beautiful thing for me was years later on, when I performed just outside Buckingham Palace, it was the Queen's Jubilee, and I was with my mum, and we got to go in Buckingham Palace after, and we're standing there, and she squeezes my hand, and I'm like, Mum, I know. She's like, Queen's House. I said, we're in the Queen's House. And I was just like, wow, Mum, we did it, we made it. Do you know what I mean? Because who would have thought from Queen's House in Holyrood Estate to Buckingham Palace? I mean, so I just like those moments for my mum were just incredible.
Yeah, big up your mum. Salute. I love her. Salute to Mama Craig.
Yes, Tina David. I'm going to give you the mum full
big up, Tina.
So everyone out there knows that. I love you, mum.
Were you quite a holidaying family? Because I mean, what you describe is quite humble beginnings. Were you a family that were able to afford to go on holidays a lot? Were you staycationing? Were you staying in the UK? Were you getting out of the UK at all?
Do you know what? It was more. My mum actually was introducing me to our first holiday. And again, it was finding money that she didn't really have. You know, she always made me feel like she could buy me anything that I ever wanted, but I knew that she was making huge sacrifices for that. I remember going to Bordeaux. It was one of the first trips.
Ooh la la.
Oh, yes. La Paris. You know what I mean? And I think she just always says to me that we went to see the Bordeaux Tapestry and I went with my godmother and my mum. And she just said I was having a temper tantrum that day. She said I was in a bad mood. It didn't matter what was going on. I don't know what it was.
How old were you these times?
I must have been 6, 7
years old. Okay, that's allowed.
Early doors. Yeah, okay. Do you know what I mean? I was in a new place and I don't know, maybe I wasn't getting enough tension or so. I don't know what it was. But then the next trip was that she took me to Ibiza. It was the first time with my mum to Ibiza, yeah? That and the experience of that compared to like the Ibiza going now and doing my pool party residencies at Ibiza Rocks.
Yes, yes.
Two different flexes, but so good that I got that experience from my mum first.
She had foresight. It really seems like your mum knew what you were going to be capable of in the future.
She got the memo. She fully understood the assignment. I mean, I remember those times where they'd have like the guys in the street with they'd set up a box and they'd have the three eggshells and you have the little ball underneath and you've got to like try and pick which one it's under. I remember being with my mum and she'd always put her money aside for me to buy like a football top or buy some kind of, and I was like, she's like, okay, do you want to have a go at this? And I was like, okay, let's watch. And I'm watching, I'm like, we're winning. The guy's winning, the guy in front of me. Then this woman comes through, they're winning. I said, this is easy. Oh my gosh. As soon as we threw down that 20 euros, bam, we lose. Next thing you're in for another one. 40 euros down. Now you're in the game, right? Then all of a sudden, someone shouts, please, please, please. Next thing I see, all of the team, we were the mark, yeah? They got us perfectly. The woman who was winning before, the guy before who was winning, the person who was doing the thing, running down the road. And I was thinking, my gosh, that football top is missing now. It's them ones, yeah?
You remember?
Had. And I thought, I'm usually the guy like, you know, I'm all up for the little moves. I thought I could, but he absolutely got me. Wow, what a time. But my mum still got me a football top. And that's what I mean. She still had an extra. So I love her for that. But good times.
And such a cool mum also to have the foresight and the passion to take you travelling at such a young age, such a formative age as well. Because, you know, I guess some people would be like, oh, maybe Ibiza a bit too soon for like a little kid or so. But like, she really wanted you to see the world, it seems.
Yeah, she wanted me to get out.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, there was one point where my grandmother had like a place like maybe 15 minutes from where I lived and she had a garden. So I was living in the council flat and it was beautiful, but I always wanted a little garden. Just a little, you know, my grandma was always tending to the flowers and I was like, oh, it'd be lovely to have that. So then when you go to a place like Ibiza in the whole trip and then you get there and you get to meet new friends from different places. I always remember there's a guy called Adrian from Wolverhampton. And we, at those times, like when we met and we were hanging out, kids around the pool. And then after, when we all left, we all kept in contact. It was like pen pals. So we'd always kind of send messages and like written messages to each other. And I was just like, this is amazing, sending letters. And he sent me photos recently of me.
So you're still in touch?
We're still in touch. He sent me like me and my Southampton football top, like me by the pool with him. And I'm just thinking, this is wild. And I just love that those memories, that nostalgia of those old school ways of staying in contact. Because you had to make an effort to send a letter, right? And the fact that everyone did, it was great.
And all brought together just by all your parents probably being like, you know what, let's get out of the UK for a little bit.
Yeah.
Wolverhampton, Southampton, all of that.
All of that. And I think it's so healthy, like, to be able to see the world. You know, if you're fortunate enough to be able to afford to go to different parts, even within just staying within the UK and just going to the outskirts of where you live and starting to see the country you live in is beautiful.
Mm.
If you can travel outside and see that there's so many different cultures and wonderful places to go to, like, please do, because it's like, it's so big, the world, when you see it.
Truly is a gift. Mm. I want to talk to you about 16 and your life changing. Talk to me about how significant 16 was for you.
Wow. So at the time, like I remember I was on the cusp of finishing the Born to Do It album. It was like, it was being written, but it didn't have like a title. It was just these songs. So there was the Rewinds and then like Film Year and 7 Days. And these times they were like on a CD. So
side note, have you still got the demos of those?
I've still got the demos. Wow. I've got the demo of Walking Away, which originally, when I wrote the song, we used a guitar riff from U2's One.
Oh yeah.
Originally. So and then we couldn't get that cleared down the line. So we ended up having to do a different version. But that version exists. And there's a song called Cocoa Butter that's in there too, which was like, if I'd known, we could have got the Palmer's deal, but we were yeah, I was ahead of the game. I mean, and I saw like DJ Khaled getting the thing. I was like, boy, I've been on this Cocoa Butter thing for time. It always seems to be the joke that my manager Colin always brings back. He said that tune Cocoa Butter. I said, but Cole, you could have got us the deal, man. I was setting teeing you up.
Hey.
But 16 was such a pivotal moment for me to go from these aspirations and dreams of being an artist to next thing, seeing people want to book me to go and do PAs of a song called What You're Gonna Do with the Artful Dodger. That was the first one. Going up to London in Clinton, my friend's Yellow Fiesta with the Jamaican flag in the back, like getting banged off the back shelf because his sub was so loud. Just like, all I knew was in the back seat, like trying to put the thing back on because the sub was too big for the car. Like, and it cost more than the car. But
so you were those guys in the car.
We were them boys.
You're walking down the street, minding your business, and all of a sudden you hear, bah, bah, bah.
You're just like, whoa, shattering the. It was wholesome. You know what I mean? Like, so when we drive up to London, we were doing like the End and the Coliseum and Camden Palace before it was like now Coco. Just good times. And those drives back, you know, you slip them a little 15, 20, 30 quid to kind of say thank you for the petrol and keep it moving.
I mean, you're 16, taking in, you know, this whole new world of work and this whole new world of, I guess, entertainment and music and creativity, because, you know, you're talking to us about just being this kid from Southampton and making tunes like, you know, in your room and your estate, but that's you and your dreams. But then you come to London, you see it working like as a business. How does your 16-year-old mind like process that?
It took a minute, Clara. I'm not going to lie. Like, I mean, I was living the dream from the time that we'd hit the M3, M25, M4. We're in London now. We're getting like different radios, pirate radio stations coming through on the. You know what I mean? Because in Southampton, you knew what you got. There was one pirate radio station called PCRS 105.3, People's Choice Radio Station, that I used to be on for a moment until one day I heard that someone's record collection got confiscated by the police and never got them back. So that was my last sort of day. That's the risk you take.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely not.
You know what I mean? When you go in there, like, you know, take anything, take all my money, not my vinyls. So going up to London, I remember I was just on the cusp of getting signed. So I'd walk into like Sony Columbia and I'd see like the Will Smith and Mariah Carey and Destiny's Child on the wall thinking, wow, this is where I need to be. And then at the time when I signed to the label I signed to called Wildstar, I remember my manager, like, is in his office, and I went into Heathman's Road in London, and we went into his office, and I said, he says it was better than it was, but it was banged up, like wooden, like desk chair, all twisted, and I was thinking, well, I just went to Sony Columbia with the marble floors, and he said, yeah, but you know what?
That's Mariah Carey money. That's what it is.
That's what I'm asking. I want some of that. I want them. And somehow, ultimately, my heart said, you know what? He was the first one who put a deal in front of me and said, you know what, I'd love to sign you, like on the basis of what you played to me on that CD, that little demo tape. Whereas everyone else wanted to put me on like development deals, even though Rewind was just about to blow up.
Mm.
So when people take confidence in me, I'm like, I'll always lean into that, you know, even in the glitter and the gold, you know.
Well, I guess it goes back to that feeling you got from your mum. You know, obviously you're her baby boy, but from early, she was like, no, okay, I'm going to commit to picking you up from the club
yes.
at 2 a.m. I'm going to take you to see all these places outside of the UK because I believe in you. And then, you know.
Absolutely. The commitment. That you're so right. That's why that word lands so deeply with me. Like throughout the years, she showed consistent commitment. Even showing me the guy with the shells, yeah?
Yeah.
It's like, look, if you're going to get stung, this is life. Life happens like this, you know what I mean? Don't get fooled by, and you kind of quickly get savvy to things and help me to quote the Follow My Intuition album. But I think I was always intuitively being led and guided. And I think you're always nurtured by your parents in some way to trust in those instincts. Mm. Like when to leave a place when you know something could get funky.
Some may say when to walk away, Craig.
Hey! And you know what you do you. When you do that?
Thank you so much.
You find a better day, right? Come on. It's there.
I might just try and slip in like your song lyrics throughout this conversation.
Please.
See how many I can get away with.
I'm here.
Also, Silent, my favourite D-cut, Hypnotic.
That's wow, hypnotic.
I love
that. Hypnotic. The way she moves on the floor, she's got it. And then you're making me feel like you don't want it.
See, look, I'm a baritone.
Girl, she's so sexy. Come on.
So good.
Oh, I appreciate
it. I love
you.
That song.
I appreciate it.
We'll get to that era.
Okay.
Actually,
okay.
But I want to talk to you about travel and where it's taken you through work. Okay, so you're 16.
Yeah.
You got signed and your life changes. Born to Do It comes out and it literally is a game changer. Obviously, people get to know you via Artful Dodger as well, but that album, you know, still to this day, people saw last year, Tori Kelly, she brought you out at one of her gigs. Tori Kelly, for people that don't know, an incredible artist, incredible vocalist, she's fantastic. And you are creating these formative memories for a lot of artists that we're loving now, as well as people in your peer group still reference you. Justin Bieber, the list goes on. So it's mad when you think about it. So that album, such a game changer. How does that change your life and where it takes you globally and what you see?
Wow. I mean, as you said, it was the difference between walking up Southampton High Street, going to my local record stores and buying records to now people who even grew up with me running up and saying, can I get a photo? And these times it was on a Happy Snaps camera, or can I get an autograph from you? And I'm like, yeah, can you do it for my brother, Georgina? And they say, you slip the word. And I said, but your name's George, yeah? Yeah, you're trying to style it. It was people wanted stuff for themselves. Yeah. I was just it was people I'd grown up and gone to school with were starting to see me on the other side of the TV screen. And it changed the whole dynamic in such a profound way. Cause I've always wanted to be the local lad and be from, I'm from Southampton, and it's always in my heart, but I recognized that it was like pulling back an arrow and you keep pulling it and it goes, and then you almost want to try and, can I pull the arrow back, because I still want to, be the guy from Holyrood Estate. And then you realize, no, the arrow's gone, man. You're doing three nights at Wembley Arena. It's different now. You're having number one songs. You're on top of the pops. You're on the other side. But the kid in me was still I don't know if I'm ready. And then you find that you're floating this incredible wave where all your dreams and aspirations are coming true. So it took me all the way to say America, where we were in LA. I remember doing three nights at the House of Blues. It was Missy and Jennifer Lopez came to the first show. And I'm doing Born to Do It and thinking oh my God, this is Missy Elliott. I've got Jennifer Lopez posters still on my wall at home. Yeah. And I've got the Missy vinyl at home. The following night, wow. The Queen Bee herself, Beyonce, comes to the show. And I'm just wow, this dream, am I actually genuinely in a dream? And then the third night is when the front of house lights go on, and I can see in the crowd there's people are making a bit of fuss over one gentleman in particular. And I look, I'm singing Walking Away, and I look, and it's Stevie Wonder himself.
Oh!
In the crowd singing the words to Walking Away. I'm like...
Well, I guess that's a very Stevie Wonder coded song when you think about the melody. It's quite, it's very Stevie inspired.
So Stevie Wonder. Yeah. Like the Gear Life vibe. I'm just like... It's what was so bizarre is whenever I tell the story, I have to be, so it's still a pinch me moment, but he came with the late great Quincy Jones, was the person he came with, and Quincy brought him backstage. I'm speaking to Stevie and I'm like, wow, if this whole dream just disappears in a second, I will accept that. We've been there. We did it. Yeah. He drops the dime of all dimes. He's like, you know what? You know, MJ's got your album. He's been giving out to his friends and just vibing. Blase, just a little sideline. So, huh? And now we're on first name terms. Quincy. MJ, who? Yeah, Michael Jackson. He bought your album, Born to Do It. He's been giving it out to his friends because he realized, I said, what? Michael Jackson's even knows who I am. And he's giving it out to his friends. At that point, I was like, yeah, this is beyond my wildest dreams. I am in some kind of, bumped my head in Wizard of Oz, and now I've landed in Munchkin Land, and I'm just like, whoa, what the hell's going on? It was one of those ones.
And I'm so fascinated about what that does to someone's psyche, because I thought it was so interesting what you said about you still kind of wanted to be that guy from the estate in Southampton. You got people's energy changing towards you who you grew up with.
Yes.
You're in the room with people who truly shaped culture. These aren't just people who are famous for flipping reasons. These are actual blueprint, game-changing artists. You're in that mix. How do you... reconcile the type of person that you want to be with all this change? Because that's a lot. Because I think it was actually, and I'll quote Lionel Richie, who I'm sure you've probably met.
Good man. Do you know what? I haven't met him personally.
I'd love to, though. That's so interesting. I would have thought you guys would have met each other.
Such a legend.
But I remember watching a documentary with him, and I think he said, the thing about fame is that you don't change. It's everyone else changes or reacts to how they think you are now because of this light that's on you.
Totally.
So how were you reconciling with all of that? Because that's a lot to deal with. Like you mentioned, like this, the arrow, and you're trying to catch it back. But then what happens when all your dreams come true and you see it for what it really is?
Clara, you're so right. It's one of the craziest sort of dichotomies of life where, or paradox of, you've been building up this thing for such a long time. Like there's, and I know that you empathize with this, like you work hard to get to a point. And when it goes, at that point, somehow the brain can quickly kick in and question, like, but you don't want to be too big for your boots, or did you put the work in? And then what that can possibly leave you in the place of going into imposter syndrome, which was something that I spoke about in my What's Your Vibe book, because you're trying to dim your own light, but your light is shining so bright and it's the thing you wanted, and you can't, it's almost like you can't believe the magnitude of what you've created. And instead of just opening up and being like, yeah, I think culturally I was always sort of under the illusion that you have to be humble, calm yourself down, like don't get too ahead of yourself.
That's a British thing for sure.
It really is.
Yeah.
So I struggled with that for many years to realize that actually I needed to address that imposter syndrome part and actually say, you know what? No. That light can be bright, it can be loud and proud, and it doesn't change who you are when you're with people.
Did you have an ego?
No, I think I humbled myself so much that's the problem that I kind of caused, is that I was doing the most, so it then became people pleasing. So then you're just like doing the most, like, I don't know, like maybe someone's going to pull the rug from underneath my feet and like it's going to take this away. And you're thinking, well, how was ever going to anyone going to take away Born to Do It? How was anyone going to take away those songs? I'm grateful that I did bring it together, because I think a lot of people still go through that. They have a rise to fame very quickly and they don't know how to really adjust to that, because there'll be ebbs and flows in your life. You know, I think like you will come off the surfboard at some point and you're going to have to ride the waves a bit and be like, do you want to get back on the board again and do this, or do you want to stay in the water? And the times when you get back on, you'd enjoy when you catch that wave again. You start to say, oh, no. When that arrow goes, or we're on the surfboard, we ride the wave, because I don't know when we're going to come off, but I'm not going to drown, but it's not that good when you get choppy water blast you in the face.
Strong surfing analogy.
Woo!
And this is why you're a lyricist, Craig.
I
thank you so much for sharing your insight, because I think it's so important for people to hear this perspective, especially sort of young creatives or people that are probably, you know, in the middle of their careers, or maybe, and it doesn't even matter if you're even a creative or not, just that thing of like, just because not everyone's going, ah, constantly, doesn't mean that the talent or whatever goes away.
That's so right.
It's a very reactionary, weird thing. And ultimately, we're still talking about this debut album 25 years later, which is, it's pretty incredible when you think about it, because not everyone gets this chance.
You're so right, Clara. I'm so grateful. I mean, even when you bring it up, it feels like the gift that keeps giving. Like, just the title Born to Do It, and I feel like it means so much more than me now. It's like it lives in people's hearts. They remember who they were with and how they felt when they heard that song. In the same way, that's why I love the music. You always remember when I heard Mario Let Me Love You. I had to pull over my car. It was one of those ones. It pulled, I had to say, I was like, I was like, I don't know, I'm pulling up, I got to stop and hear this tune. And it hit differently. I was like, and that's the power of music, can make you, I had plans, I was running late from that, I had to pull up, I couldn't even listen to it in traffic. So knowing that album has had that effect on people over the years, and it lives, it just reinforces, I hope, for any aspiring artist to recognize that in your moments of glory, enjoy those moments, and they'll live in a space. And in the times when you're creating, trust me, you're consistently the same all the way through. And the ebb and flow is not based on just the light being on and the light being off. That is life. But you can, when you hear that song that you've finished, or you've written something that you love for a book, or you know, you've created a piece of art, it lives. Like, you've done the work. It's when you try and define it with a number or what it should do or what society should tell you it's done, is where the problems start. So if you just say, I created something beautiful there, let's see where it goes, and we'll get on to the next bit. And if it goes, it goes. If it doesn't, I still love it the same way.
Wise words, wise words. At this point, where is the, I guess, most unexpected place your work has taken you? Where have you been recognised, or where have you been popular, found success? You're like, oh, okay, that's cool. Like,
oh, do you know what? I did a show called Music in High Places. Do you remember that show?
I don't think I do.
Okay, no. So it was a show where they took different artists from all around the world and they take them to a wild and wonderful place to perform acoustically. So I'd seen one where it was like Boys to Men. They'd taken them to the border between North and South Korea. And there's like literally a hut that separates a demarcation line between the two. And there's a South Korean soldier on one side and a North on the other. And they sit down and they just start playing like Yesterday and like Water Runs Dry and like Boys, End of the Road. And I was just like, oh my God, it was so epic. And I loved that show. And I got the call up to go to Costa Rica to do an acoustic performance in the Costa Rican rainforest of all places. So I'm like on a drawbridge, like across this crazy river, doing filming in. And next thing I'm sort of like, we're on this rock that's got like, that looks onto this vast plain and doing Walking Away. And on the way there, I remember going into one store. There was like one, I wouldn't say a convenience store. We're in the middle of the raisin rainforest. So it's not like you got the co-op like around the corner. It was like a tiny little, like you can pick up a few little pieces. I hear, dun, 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 dun. I was like, on my way. I said, no. There's no way that they can be playing 7 days in this shop in the middle of the rainforest in Costa Rica, Clara. I was like, nah. I went in and a person was like, they took double take. They had, the only CD they had there was this Born to Do It album. It was like one of those ones like at the Truman Show where they placed it there perfectly. And I was just like, no, you're playing it. And they were like, no. And I was like, it was just this, no. That was the most crazy thing I've experienced. In the middle of a rainforest, they had my CD playing on a CD player. I was like, crazy.
I'm really visualizing as you tell the story. That's very, very surreal.
Imagine you.
Very surreal.
You go in deeply into some like far, far away, and they say, and you start seeing in the background someone's watching Roots. Like, wow, is that you? Car in front of what? Twist. It's that wild where you're just like, there's no way that could have even been like planned. So, yeah, and it was these rusty kind of like and rocky roads to get to where we're going. Mm. But that was cool. Music in High Places was a great idea and concept for like doing acoustic performances.
And then you stayed on that side of the world. Well, you moved up a little bit from Costa Rica.
Yes.
You went to Miami.
Yeah.
So you settled there for quite a while.
Mm.
What was the thing that led you to make that your home?
Do you know what? I'd actually been going from like the first time I did something for like T4, I think it was like a filming special in Miami. So it was like from 2000, 2001. And it was like we had dancers that came out and we did the song. And then every year I'd go back with Fraser T. Smith.
Shout out Fraser.
Yeah, Fraser, man. Like he just got an honorary degree like last year. He was like, he's hype.
Dear listener, for people that don't know, Fraser T. Smith is an incredible producer. So he used to be Craig's guitar player, but he's worked with the likes of Stormzy, Dave, Florence the Machine. Like the list goes on. He's a very, very talented and just a really nice person, actually. So shout out Fraser.
Yeah. Exactly that. He's one of the loveliest guys you can meet. And we went out for like maybe 4 or 5 Christmases or sort of New Year's together where we'd stay in Miami. And we'd stay at the Fountain Blue Hotel. We have a good time and it was great. So I always got a touch from Miami. But it was only when I went out there, like it must have been 2010, around those sort of times. And I was like, maybe I could move here, you know. Maybe I walked in. So I used to stay at the Mondrian Hotel in LA. I was familiar with that brand. It had a good vibe about it. They were about to build this new Mondrian on South Beach. And I was like, I saw this, the realtor did a number on me. He said, like, I said, I just want to look at one place. He showed me one little studio room. And I said, yeah, it's nice. And the view is beautiful. He said, no, you don't want to go upstairs. I don't think it's the price range isn't really your, he did one of those. And I was like, huh? He said, no, you don't really go upstairs. It's like the price range. I said, well, let me just have a little look. Let me a little peek.
He knew what he was doing.
A little peek. I had a little peek. changed my life. I was like, whoa. It was this wrapping round penthouse that was outside. And I was like, well, the only way I could ever make that work is if I genuinely made the plunge and came out here. And I made that move. It was the first time of moving away from home. And I was so happy I made that move because I feel like it was an amazing shift. I mean, look, you got palm trees, beaches, like the music scene, the food, the vibes. I was them times I was like, had the sports car, did everything. But I guess deep down in my heart, the one thing I was always missing was home. Even with everything that was going on, there was something culturally that I was like, I'm far away from my mum, even though she was coming out for holidays. I think at some point I'll go home. So there was a point at which it did accumulate to like, I love it, but I need to get back home.
What parts of the UK were you able to take with you to Miami? Were you like importing like Marmite and fancy UK tea or whatever? Were you able to
create
a little bit of home from home?
It would have been them times. I don't know if they had the Marvelous Creation ones, but the Cadbury's.
Right.
Dairy milk bars are different out there. Like,
they cost about £7.
Yeah, they're not cheap, and they taste, the milk is different. I don't know what's going on. Like, it's just different. So whenever I went back to the UK, I'd always bring like these dairy milk chocolate bars with me everywhere. But yeah, to go out to Miami, it was like throwing these house parties. And I think that was really where I brought the UK vibes into my apartment, because I was past the elitist sort of red rope, you're in VIP and it's supposed to be where the party's at. But deep down, when I really deeped it, it was like everyone was sort of praying to this wooden table with a vodka bottle on it. The drinks were spilling all over my shoes. I couldn't really hear what someone was saying. And I'm looking over the red rope, seeing someone just shocking out, vibing, going to the bar, getting a quick shot with people. But then they go to the restroom, it's cool. And I'm like, bro, I can't even move. And this is supposed to be living a dream. You know what I mean? Everyone was too cool for school. No disrespect, like, live your life. Yeah, live the dream. Yeah, but the dark glasses, I know man couldn't see nothing. Yeah. People around me just like, what is going on here? So I went home.
Do you know, I just laugh at what you said, because it's so true how rudimentary and basic it is. You are worshipping a wooden table with a bottle of vodka on
it's
it.
It's that, Clara.
It's just like...
deep it.
Is everyone okay?
Is everyone really okay? Is everyone all right?
Because it's actually not that glamorous.
It's not that. And you know what? I'm always for like, go out and enjoy yourself. Spend your money how you want to spend it. But I found that I could give people a better vibe if I could bring that into my home, and I could actually throw a party where you get all those things, free food, drinks on tap, hostess and the mostess. You come in, you're wearing something nice, like shout out my boy, like, yo, yeah, I see you there, man. The shirt looking crazy. Make sure everyone clocks my man. That someone comes in, a woman comes in looking nice, dressed, wow, looking nice in the red. Everyone feeding VIP. And I never used to play my own songs. And it was only...
Never.
Only when this one woman like said to me, you know what, like, you couldn't just like play a little bit of 7 days. And she was very, very attractive.
I was just going to say, I ain't going to lie. Like, I know she wasn't ugly.
She spun me. She spun me a little bit, Clara. I ain't going to lie.
She said, so hypnotic.
She was very hypnotic.
Right.
So sexy. And, and she just said, can you just do a little? And then actually I did a bit, and then I did the whole song. And then it became, she said, oh, I need that. So I put it on SoundCloud. Like I started to record the actual sets that I was doing, put them on SoundCloud, and then little did I know that my manager would pick it up. He would then, Colin gave it to different radio stations, and that was the onset of us meeting back at Best of All, where we met, because it was those things now were getting played, and people were like, oh my God, like this house party, and then I had house party sets on radio, so.
God, isn't that mad?
It's a crazy world.
So many full circle moments in your life.
So true.
But then, well, like, as you said, it made for this house party, it made for this radio show. You came back to the UK in 2016. So you were in Miami, what, for about 5 or 6 years?
Yeah.
What, besides, I guess, the work, what eventually made you come back? Was there like a spiritual pull?
Do you know what? You nailed it in one. It was like the family and being close to my friends and family, I felt was one. But there was something in my heart that was saying, look, I had everything on paper. I was ticking all these boxes, and yet something in my soul was saying, like, you're not on the right trajectory here. Like you really need to, like, the music that's like, I was being the effect rather than the actual source of what had got me there. And I knew that what the source was what I loved, was making and creating music. And I knew that as soon as I came back and I started working with people in the UK and started getting in with producers and songwriters, that something would shift, and it did. I was coming back and people were like, oh, you're going back out to Miami? I was like, no, I'm just going to stay in the hotel I'm staying at for another week or so. And they're like, bro, well, you're not going to go to Miami. And it was this weird juxtaposition. People like, why are you not going back to this paradise place? Go and drive the sports car. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to like go in. We got like a little tiny little studio over that I was going into, underground kind of vibe. And I wanted to get dark and dirty with it and get back like I did when I was with Mark Hill making Born to Do It. Mm. And it was the best decision I ever made, because I remember going in, which you know so well, walking into Mr. Jam show, Corrupt FM, and that moment on One Extra changed my entire life. On that one moment, the love I felt when I walked in and I saw everyone just like switch from being in the sort of, we're in the garage parody of Corrupt FM to, no, Corrupt FM MCs now. Big Nasty coming in wearing his harness sleeve. Whoa, bro, man's my tune, bro. Like, wow, starts doing ooh yes. Next thing you know, Stormzy's in the building. Shola Amma's there. This is, it was like a celebration. And then when I went into that filmy in over the Skrillex, Where Are You Now, Diplo, and it went off, and everyone spit a 16, a 16. I've been doing this since I was 16, and I'm feeling like this. It was like being in a youth club with everyone. And it went so viral that I remember after I got in the car and I looked on Twitter, and I hadn't had a viral moment like that before. Mm. Viral wouldn't really exist from Born to Do It times, but I saw Diplo, I saw Skrillex, I saw Justin Bieber, I saw Scooter Braun, everyone saying get to 45 minutes in when he does this freestyle thing. And then they had to take it one extra. It blasted up the whole website.
I remember very, very well.
You know what I mean? They were like, we need to get this on to, how could we get this on Radio 1? It was just moving mad. And I was just like, what just happened then? And I, from that, having met Big Nasty, we went in the studio about 2 weeks later. We did When the Bassline Drops, which was like a top 10 hit for us both. And next thing you know, Follow My Intuition Now, I'm end up becoming number one. And then we did an arena tour off the back, which was, had been that long since my last arena tour with Born to Do It. So it was like God saying, just please get home and make the right decision here, because you've overstayed your welcome in Miami. It's always there if you want to go, but get home. And it changed my life, and I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah, it's really heartwarming, actually, just listening to you talk about that time, because I remember the buzz in the BBC building, particularly, obviously, Radio 1 Extra, where it all started, and Radio 1, everyone being, oh my God, have you heard that Craig David freestyle with Corrupt FM? Oh my God, have you heard it? And like, you know, then seeing Justin Bieber tweeting about it and all of that. And I guess, again, it's testament to when the work is good, if it's meant to survive, it will survive.
It does.
And you had no idea that making the album was going to have an effect on like your Justin Bieber's, your Tori Kelly's, your Corrupt FM crew, like right. Your Big Nasty's, all those people. And like, yeah, you're still here in 2025, like talking about it. And I guess coming back to the UK, feeling that love from people, did that give you, I guess, more of a voracious appetite to see more of the UK and celebrate that fan base who clearly never went away? Because, you know, people can be very London-centric when we think about, you know, success, but you've had truly global success and truly national success.
Totally. You know, it was like coming home and getting one huge hug from the people that you love. Like, it just felt, I felt that from the time that I arrived back, that was the feeling in my heart, like, wow, we're home. As soon as I came through with my passport, and I literally just said, you know what, I'm actually selling up Miami. I'm actually going to be, when I really consciously make that move. And it just felt that, that like there's a fan forum that have been like, they supported me since day one. And they were always saying like, Craig, please, when's the new music going to come? When are you going to drop the music? And in a period where there was a bit of lull of me just living life, you know, and not making that music. And then when I came back, I was just like, everyone just seemed to be so grateful and happy that I'd come back. And it's funny because you don't know it because you're in the eye of the storm, but sometimes when there's a little gap, there's a break between, I always use this sort of as a pause between the notes, is what makes a beautiful chord or makes a nice melody, right? And you, when you're in the eye of the storm, you feel like you always need to be on. So you need to have all the keys always pressed, right? But that's just a whole load of noise. So actually that going away to Miami, which gave a break and a pause, when I came back, it allowed for a moment of like, you know, other things have happened. The life moves on. It's not all centered around me. But when I came back into it, it was like this love of like, oh, you're back. Rather than having put loads of music out for such a long time and not getting the memo where it's like, guys, maybe you just want to just pull the faders down for like a little bit and come back again. Usher spoke about this more recently when he said, like, it's not something you consciously go into, but when you have a moment away and then you come back, the comeback can be even bigger and better. And in his respect, like Vegas residencies, Super Bowl and what he's created now. So I come back to the UK and I'm just so grateful because the love here is just like, wow. And it was like, I'm home. I got a homely feeling.
And you're going on tour.
I'm going on tour. So the fact
Let's get into it.
Yeah, you know what, Clara? It feels like a celebration of the 25 years of Born to Do It. So all of those songs that mean something to so many people, those songs getting played. The TS5 experience, which has been amazing to go to back to Ibiza, not doing those shell things anymore and just actually just staying in the pool party and giving people the right vibes, having that as part of the show. To be able to have acoustic breakdown moments in this show, which I think are really important. I've had so many acoustic performances. We did something at St. Pancras recently, like a little improv on the piano as we were going through St. Pancras Station, and people were going nuts, like people were missing their trains and they were like, my man's doing 7 days, this is crazy, I'm gonna miss one. And I was like, this is wild. And
anyone who was trying to catch an LNER train, Craig is so sorry.
I'm so right? sorry. I'm so, so sorry. Like, it was like, I should just been silent. But I just had to have those keys. Lamar's going to be on this tour with me. So we're to have something, a legend of Lamar be performing as part of this tour. And I've got something exciting with him that we can make work within the show too. So it's just it's a celebration of all that music. And like we start off in Leeds, we end up being in like Manchester, Valentine's Day. So I'm like, anyone who's ready for the Valentine's special, we've got you. And then we end up finishing off in London on the 20th. So we're going up and down the country, so many dates, it's like 11, 12 dates in the arenas. But I'm just really grateful, man. I never take that for granted.
It's not just about tour life. You also got a brand new song, SOS. So why this song? Why now?
Okay, this song, it feels so in alignment with where I'm at in my life. The sentiment of the song is all about when you're ready to dive deep. You're ready to not do the calm sailing anymore in life, but also in relationship. Do you know what I mean? Like finding a partner and being like, are you ready to do the thing? Do you know what I mean? I love it because we've been talking so much about analogies with surfing and lighthouses and
you're
all this.
That nautical theme again.
Now we're throwing the SOS, we're throwing the life boy.
Yeah.
The whole thing's going on here. Trust me, I'm gonna get some great people saying, you should do some cruises, you know, the way you're moving like it's crazy. Right? It's like, but the song, it feels like one of those dance bangers that I know will set the tone for the summer coming up, which is great. I love that. But I just like, I think lyrically, it's so infectious. The melody for me, and I've been living with that for a moment. So I'm happy the world gets to hear that tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? It's crazy. Like you're gonna actually have the tune. And even when I'm looking at like the Roots map thing, it's so SOS. The actual way the cover looks as well. We've got this so in theme. So I'm so grateful.
We planned it.
You got it so together around here. But yeah, big tune. And I feel like the lyrically it will land for a lot of people.
Oh, because you know, I was gonna ask at this point in your career, you know, where you're able to still be able to talk about a great record you made 25 years ago. You're still able to bring out new stuff that people are invested in. Do you feel like you still have to prove anything to anyone? Did you ever at all? Or do you feel like you're in a space where you're like, you know what? This is who I am. Get into it.
You see when you said that at the end, yeah? How good that felt. Mm-hmm. I could feel it was landing even when you said that. Like, because once you pull back all these fragmented parts of you. There are all different stories that you've told yourself, like either defense mechanisms or people pleasing or the imposter syndrome and trying to find your way. And there's a moment where you pull in all these parts of the puzzle and it brings it back in and you feel whole. And you're like a lighthouse, yeah? You know, like you're beaming out the light and the waves again are crashing against
Craig,
you.
You're really giving it to us with these analogies today. Oh, we've had surfing, we've had music notes,
lighthouse
we've had puzzles.
Now. I've got you.
We're doing lighthouse, okay?
Lighthouse. It's beaming. And you're
nautical.
Nautical, and you're solid. You're not getting swayed. You're not getting like rocked like a ship or a boat. You're like, you're in your, and I think that's the best feeling to have because then, You meet the world in this beautiful place rather than waiting for someone to tell you, are you good enough? And I know that, and I say this to everyone out there, you are more than enough. Like there's no one like you. And once you realize that, it's the most empowering feeling that you can have. So that then you make music from a place that's like you would have done as a musician when I first started off, before it's happened, because my only litmus test was myself. Hearing Rewind, walking on my headphones with the bass button off on my little yellow Sony Walkman and feeling like, oh my God, this is the one. Without it, no crowd. And I feel like, you know, when you've done something good, you've created something well, and you're like, hold on to that, because don't let anyone take that away from you, because that's what creativity is all about. So yeah, I'd say that I'm really grateful to be feeling whole.
And in that wholeness and in that confidence in your creativity, has that allowed you to slow down a bit more rather than go, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, I've got to stay on?
Absolutely. I think like that's the spin that the world gives you, that you, if you don't participate, or if you're not on, you're going to miss out, or it's, or you're, the light will fade. I don't buy that anymore. I get it. I get that there's things to put your attention and time into, but I think that the older and wiser I've got is that I realize the most important thing as a musician is to make sure those songs sound great. Like the rest of it is icing on the cake. Yeah, we can then tell the story, we can spin it how you want it and gas it up. But if the song isn't right, it's like trying to give someone like some of these snacks. Mm-hmm. If it don't taste right, you can put it in a glossy little packet, but again, it's glitter and gold. What's really going on underneath the hood? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that served me really well to just be like, it's a bit like David Beckham, right? If you can put the ball 30 yards from one kick, why would you want to take on 20 players like you're 20 trying to put nutmeg people and doing a madness? Just pass the ball in it.
I don't speak football. Nutmeg, please explain.
Okay, so through your legs.
Okay, got it.
So take it through your legs, doing a little Cruyff turn would be to put the ball back between your... Just doing a mad load of skills.
Gotcha. I do know that Cruyff was a famous Dutch football player.
Do you know your stuff?
No, because I went to the Cruyff Stadium to go and see Beyonce in Amsterdam.
No! I like how the music brought you back to Cruyff.
No, I know music. I know football through pop culture, but not through the actual
thing. That's so wholesome. But yeah, it's all the skills and the tricks,
right, gotcha,
which are okay at a certain time, because that's the part of the thing. But once you get to a point where it's like, we need to score a goal here, and I need this ball to be over there to the striker so he can score. So we can do the nutmeg, we can do all these little skills, pass the thing. And I realized, pass the ball or put the ball in the back of the net, and don't have to be like too many tricks, and just land the thing that you need to land.
And it has landed. Craig David.
What?
Thank you for your joy, for your analogies, for your music.
I love you. You're great.
It's been a wonderful journey. We have arrived.
We have arrived, yes.
Craig, thank you so much for joining us on Roots from LNER. We are 1 month away from Craig's commitment tour, which kicks off in Leeds at the start of February. Head to myticket.co.uk to get your tickets. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Roots. If you liked what you heard, why not rate and review and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts. Also, look out for Craig's Quiet Coach episode, which will be dropping next week. You'll be hearing about his traveling snacks, tracks and hacks, and what places have inspired and changed him. Until then. Get credit when you join LNER Perks. Visit lner.co.uk/perks. Roots from LNER, a Distorted production.
Just such a good guy. Excuse me, I'm just going to go and devour Craig David's back catalogue. Before I go, though, I should say this. You can follow Roots wherever you're listening to this. And before you do go, make sure you hit follow right here on your next podcast so you never miss an episode. You can find all my recommendations along with news, reviews and loads more on Podcast Rex at www.podcastrex.com. That's www.podcastrex.com.